Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, we would like to welcome everyone to Missing Pages of History, a show that is a voice for all of the underserved communities. It is to be used as a vehicle where the people can come forward and express their stories and tell their stories and share information that the mainstream media often omit or intentionally leave out. We here tonight at Missing Pages of History would like to have your views and comments today. Today we're basically going to be having an open mic. We'd like to know what's on your mind. We're going to be talking about some issues and ideas that we think is important to our people and to oppress underserved communities. As your host, Lee Robbins, for Missing Pages of History, we have our contributors and our analysts, as usual, on our program. They begin our views and perspective, and right now we'd like to welcome our contributors and analysts of Missing Pages of History. We have Susie out of Virginia. We have Mikhail and June out of Pennsylvania. And they will be giving their views on some of the ideas and issues that are going on in our communities. And we'd like to have our listening audience to call in and share theirs. The call-in number is 818-337-0016. That's, if you have anything to say, please call in at 818-337-0016. Press 1 so your number will show up on our keyboard, and we will recognize you, and you will be identified by the last four numbers of your phone. Again, you will be identified by the last four numbers on your phone. So let's get started. During this week, we were doing some research, just looking at certain numbers and demographics as relates to the various communities inside the United States. And one of the demographics that we came across that were very interesting and were done by a research group called the Pew Research Center. And they came across some demographics as relates to the different racial makeup of the various communities in the United States, dealing with the question of fertility. Here is some data on this question of fertility based upon race and ethnicity. This was done during the year 2010, and it says, when we talk about the fertility rate by race and ethnicity in 2010, they have whites at 1.8%, you have Hispanics at 2.4%, you have blacks at 2.1%, and they had Asians at 1.8%. So in terms of fertility rate, during around 2010, the Hispanic had the greatest increase, 2.4%, and the least was the whites and the Asians at 1.8%, whereas the African in America or the blacks held at 2.1%. Now, it says that Hispanics are more than a quarter of the nation's youngest residents, according to the new population estimates, accounting for 26.3% of the population younger than the age one. Among other major non-Hispanic groups, the share for whites is 49.6%, for blacks is 13.7%, and for Asians, at 4.4%. The long-term result of these changes among younger age groups is that non-Hispanic whites are projected to become a minority of the population. That's at 47% by the year 2050. According to Pew Research Center population projections, they said census changes projections said that these changes will occur in 2042. Hispanics already the nation's largest minority group are projected to continue to account for most population growth by that year. I'm going to stop right there. And to my contributor and analyst, based upon this particular demographic in terms of the projections of this poll and these numbers, how do you think these numbers play out as it relates to making social policies and implication of the future of America? Brother Mikhail.
Peace. This is Mikhail out of Philadelphia.
And in response to that question, I think that what we kind of look at is the management of this country and its economic system requires a certain kind of a workforce, and it had the privilege of having a very low wage rate for most of these low-income workers. So when there was a time when the factories and farms were an important industry in this country, blacks, so-called blacks, and Hispanics were primarily the low-wage earners. Europeans had experienced that in Europe, and once they got here, it was an opportunity for them to let somebody else do that hard labor. The question becomes, too, in terms of the voting bloc, how are these voting blocs going to affect the direction of the country through the, whether it's the Democratic or the Republican parties? And also the final question becomes, with an excess population of workers in a country where cheap labor rules, how will those excess workers be handled? Will it be the prison system, or will family planning and abortion be a tool used to reduce those populations?
Okay. Ellis June, what is your take on these numbers and projections?
Well, in terms of the numbers, they tell a story themselves. But before that, one must understand that if you're a statist or a demographer, that you can always plant the end result in your favor. If you want to prove that whites are making more income, sometimes you eliminate enough of the higher class blacks or upper middle class Hispanics not to show that they're receiving the income, and the numbers are slanted or looking as if whites are the one indeed making more money. But in terms of the numbers that you threw out of social policy, it is, if you look around your neighborhood, your community, your state, you can see that in the Hispanic population has grown. When you look at your work sites, you see them hiring more Hispanics. In government alone, you see more Hispanics represented in the legislative and executive branch. So they're using those numbers to justify putting this new group of individuals in certain positions, creating certain legislation that actually speak to their, let's say, particular cultural or ethnic ethnicity. Let's put it that way.
Okay, and Susie, what would be your take on these demographics?
You can see it around you in all sorts of the community. And I think when you really think about it, this is probably part of the New World Order. The white folks are becoming the minority, the normal. These are the black race for the Hispanics that were left by the people.
Okay. Let's move on to another set of demographics and information that we received earlier, and I think it's maybe of interest to our audience. It comes from an article that states that D.C. Council is up to you to do the right thing on the living wage. So we did on the issue of living wage. This article was created or printed on the 13th of September by Lisa Silverman, and it stated this. It said, "This is a true living wage bill focusing on employers who, because of their size, can exert downward pressure on wages in a local labor market. This legislation would raise the starting wages to $12.50 an hour for retailers whose parent companies gross more than $1 billion annually and have stores in the district larger than 75,000 square feet. Compared to the current minimum wage, which is $8.25, which keep many who work full-time in poverty, thousands of workers in D.C. will benefit. D.C. retail employees are three times more likely than other workers to be in poverty, according to an Economic Policy Institute analysis. A living wage can benefit employers by reducing employees' turnover, which lower costs and increase productivity. D.C. has an example of such a model in Fort Lincoln, whose executive said the company average wage of $20 an hour endure employees' loyalty and productivity. This bill applies to national retailers grossing $1 billion, which stores in D.C. larger than 75,000 square feet. We have collective bargaining agreements in place in which management and employees manually decide that negotiated compensation should replace the minimum $12.50 an hour in this legislation. It is an agreement, not an automatic exception for unionized workplace. So in essence, what this article is really dealing with, this whole issue around the whole concept of living wage versus a minimum wage. Many people feel like right now when you work for a minimum wage, they call you the working poor. In D.C., they try and get the legislators to adopt a minimum bill where at least the minimum wage be $12.50. And one of the issues raised that the more people get paid in terms of their minimum wage, the more reliable, the more stability the employees will be to the employer. I would like to get Mikhail just your take in terms of this concept. Do you think the minimum wage should be increased, and how do you view this position, increase those who have a certain size businesses, if they 75,000 square feet, with a business that large and have a large set of resources of $1 billion or more, should it be paying more than $8.25? If so, how much should it be? What would be your general idea around what you think it would be a livable wage when it comes to the actual worker?
Well, to be honest, I've worked for the post office for 25 years, and the time period where I was working there was a very good period to come in and maybe even get out. Full-time, very good benefits, and a very good wage, and I paid a lot of taxes, a lot of city taxes, a lot of state taxes, and a lot of federal taxes, and was able to do a few things, have a home, raise a family, and educate my children. So I'm not going to begrudge anybody else that opportunity. I know when I worked at the post office, which is currently being downsized, when I first came in, we had quite a few employees, and that tax base was very good for the city. It was good for the individuals who worked there. To come out of this economic malaise that we're currently experiencing, a living wage is necessary. Now, when it comes to different ethnic groups, what used to happen for African Americans, when we were coming out of the South in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, we would get, if we got a good job, we were able to take that money and translate it into some wealth and in purchasing land in the South. And you see the same thing with a lot of the Hispanics. They're able to come here, and because of the dollar exchange rate, they're able to purchase nice homes, very nice homes, actually, in the countries where they came from, and that's for their retirement. So I'm not going to begrudge anybody a real wage. $12.50 an hour is a good start. The taxes raised from that will rebuild the cities that are affected.
To Jill, what is your take on this whole issue around minimum wage, working wage, living wage? If a company is making over $1 billion a year and that money is particularly is being generated from that particular region, do you think the people or the workers are asking too much if they ask for an increase of $4 to $5 more, which in D.C. they say the average worker is around $8.25? We know how expensive it is in Washington, D.C. and any other big cities. They are saying at least $12.50. And there's one company, as an example, where they're giving employees $20 an hour. What is your take in terms of around the social struggle of companies being responsible in terms of giving an adequate wage where workers can maintain their family themselves, particularly when they have the capability of doing it?
Well, my take is not too different from what Brother Mikel said. I would say, yay. An increase in the minimum wage for workers today in America would be great, because it would satisfy or help to decrease the inequality that exists between the working poor and those people who are making so much more, the upper class people here in America. And when you give them more money, as he said before, it trickles down. It has a trickle-down effect where they can feed themselves and their families, clothe themselves, provide housing. They may even be able to afford better health care. So in terms of upping the minimum wage, I say it's past time for it, and I'm totally in agreement with it.
You know, one of the things that got up in the statement I found really interesting, when we talk about wages, we must look at wages in relation to this question of race and how it plays out in the society. It says that in the D.C. retail employees, that are three times more likely than other workers to be in poverty, according to an Economic and Policy Institute analysis. Now, we talk about retail workers. When we talk about retail workers, they talk about there tends to be a tendency to these workers have lower wages, and when you look at the color makeup, it seems to be more predominantly people of color. How can we eradicate or improve in the area of when we look at the disparity between money, between races, the races in terms of workers? Why is there there's a lot tendency of retail workers to be more people of color and make less money, and non-retail workers seem to be people who are not of color and they have high salaries? How can we address the question of wage and race as they intertwine, Brother Mikel?
Well, race is the factor, and it goes with the history of the country. As I said before, the European got to this country. Their folks were suffering in Europe. They're poor. They released them here, and what happened is that they needed cheap labor to get the whole project of founding America started. So that was the beginning of the slave trade and so on and so forth. A big part of that covenant was actually built upon the privilege of whites to have this country for themselves. And it was a big problem trying to decide what to do with the slaves post the emancipation. Currently, we're still at the bottom of the totem pole pretty much, and that's due to the quality of the schools we've had and the backgrounds that we've generally come from. We've made some progress, but the racial aspect is definitely a factor. There's a lot of construction here in Philadelphia, and the companies are generally from out of state. They're generally of European family orientation, so you may have a construction company that's Italian or Irish, and they generally hire their own family. And when they do need to get some cheap labor, well, that's where our jobs had come from. And if they can get cheaper labor elsewhere, it might be the Hispanic population coming into the country. That's what they've been doing. But the underlying question becomes, is there a way to break the system that was designed to privilege European people? We've seen in South America and in North America, the immigration policy was often designed to increase the white population and hold back the African and people of color.
Okay, we're going to stop right there and let our audience know that we are now taking calls. Please call in at 818-337-0016, 818-337-0016. We basically have an open mic tonight, but we are dealing with some ideas as it relates to its impact in terms of we do these policy studies on data, how they may impact policies that relates to us as a people and from the various communities that we come from. And we have a caller who is online who would like to give their perspective on this issue, or if they have something new they would like to add to. We welcome that. So far we've been talking about the fertility rates and how that seems to be that Hispanics is producing at a greater rate than Africans, Asians, and whites. And what does that mean? As well as we talk about this question of livable and working wages and how that plays out racially and what does that mean. And so we'd like to have your views on these topics and others. So we're going to go to our caller. We have a caller on the line. We're going to identify you by last four numbers. We are caller 4644. Caller 4644. Your question, comment, please, caller. Yes. Welcome to Mr. Page of History, caller.
Yeah, when you said tonight, I was wondering what's going on here. It ain't even noon here yet.
Okay,
I thought
we'll
I was listening to a rebroadcast.
No, this is live. Albert State caller. Thank you.
You know, I'm going to tell you something. I'm not the... I've heard some prices for raising the minimum wage up to $15 and so on and so on. I totally myself think that is a moot point. It seems like the discussion of minimum wage always come out of black society. Why are we continuing to emphasize minimum wage jobs in 2013 is beyond, you know, my reckoning. That's something that your politicians bring to you along with those other social issues. One of the big problems in the black community is not racism, it's the economics, which they don't control. And it doesn't seem as if there's any emphasis toward controlling those economics. I don't know what city that you're calling from, but if you look at the things that's going on, and, you know, like for instance, I hear we complain about how our children are being locked up by the police. Well, that's what they're supposed to do. Look at where your police come from. Your police come from the rural areas where your prisons are built. And they need to send a commodity back to those prisons so that their uncles and aunts and their nephews and brothers and sisters will have a job working in those prisons. So, you know, what else you mentioned about the fertility rate?
Yes, that's correct. Fertility rate. They send
look at the number of abortions. Look at the number of black abortions that go on in your community. I think the one gentleman said that he was from Philadelphia. And what, Philadelphia public schools closed, what, 30, 35 schools, 38 schools? Well, you go back in 2008, black women aborted 18,600 babies. And that was, what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when in 2013 they would be looking to go into the elementary school. Well, if there's no children, what are they going to do? They'll close the schools. And that's not just in Philadelphia, it's in Chicago, St. Louis, where I'm calling from. Hispanics are having children. We don't.
Caller, can I stop you for a second? I want your response to these statistics here. And then we'll get back to your analysis and support of Mr. Page's. Get that feedback to this issue right here, based upon where you have led us to down this road. We looked at some research of demographics that were done on dealing with the median net worth of household. And I'm saying when we talk about economics, also we got to look at economics as it relates to when people make decisions or impact on this question of population. But this is what this report states. It stated that the median net worth of households from 2005 and 2009 were as follows, okay? In 2009, the median net worth of household from whites was $1,113,149. The median net worth of household from Hispanic was $6,325. And the median net worth of household for blacks was $5,677. This was in the year 2009. So you're looking at disparity close to that, something like, what, $108,000 to $109,000 between whites and Hispanics and blacks. What does that say? What is the implication in terms of looking at that reality, in terms of how people behave, what we can do, and what is the cause of it? I'd like to get your response to that then briefly, then we'll go to our analysts.
Well, you know, Asians have a household income, which is 25% greater than whites. And look at African immigrants, Nigerians and so forth. Their household income is, in some areas, is greater than whites too.
Now, and I just, income. Let me say, we're not saying income, it's the net worth. That's a little, that's
well,
different.
Yeah. Well, the same thing would apply with the net worth too. Well, you got to have income in order to create net worth. Net worth change all the time. You know, if you pay your gas bill and it's up to date yesterday, well, today you accrued another bill, so it's going to subtract from your net worth. But you got to have the income before you can have the net worth. White's net worth is higher because there's more of them here in the country, and also they look after their own. Like the gentleman said, when your white construction companies, they hire their own people. Hey, you see the same thing going on in Asians with Asian companies here. They hire their own people too, and also the Hispanics and the Mexicans.
Okay, caller, we'd like to thank you. We're going to put you on hold right now. We'd like to
continue to listen.
Thank you, caller. Hey, caller, thank you very much. To our analysts, we'll start with June, then we'll go to Susie. Right now, their demographic is talking about between the net worth, between the households, you have over $100,000 or more coming out of white households. Can you speak to the social implication and the impact, how that would influence how people vote and social policies? We start with June, then we'll go to Susie. All right, June, we'd like to hear your position on that, on the disparity.
Yes, basically, the policy, after hearing those numbers, states, in essence, that the white or European American who has set up the power structure here in America economically awarded themselves. So it's not only that whites who have businesses actually hire more of themselves, but they also hire and pay everyone who looks like them a higher wage. And the bottom line, the income disparity, is that they prefer us to be the working poor. It doesn't matter what skills or what labor set we have going in the job, it's what position we hold within the society. We're the lower class worker, so they're going to reflect that in our wages, again, irregardless of what skill set you have, and they're just going to give us less than what they're receiving because they want to maintain their status quo.
Okay, we'll go to Susie. We'd like to hear your response to this household disparity, Susie. What is your take on that?
Okay, my take, that's one reason why if you look at the net growth, you look at the net for these individuals and stuff, and when you look at your politicians and the laws and rules and the structure of everything, then it automatically gives them that advantage to go to continue to keep things in their favor.
Okay, what we'd like to do is make a quick announcement about in the future. We want to remind our listening audience that Missing Pages of History is a bi-weekly program. We come on every other week, every other Saturday at 12 noon. We also would like to remind those who are listening to our programs, if you don't hear this program in its entirety, you can go to our archive by typing in www.blogtalkradio.com/missing-pages-of-history-inc. You can go to archive to hear this program entirety. We can go over a few minutes more. At the same time, we'd like to remind all our supporters that our annual quarterly raffle drawing fundraiser has been extended to October the 5th. It has been extended to October 5th, and you can hear the winners on WCLM 1450 AM in Richmond, Virginia. So, okay, for those who'd like to know more about our organization, who'd like to support us, you can see any contribution donation to Missing Pages of History, P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. That's P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, zip code 23261. We thank you for your support. You can contact us at Missing Pages of History 1 at Yahoo, Missing Pages of History 1 at Yahoo. We're going to go over a few minutes, and I'd like to hear my caller, I'd like to give him his last response to this last question, this income disparity. And then we got each one of our analysts, or we got our analysts to give us our closing thought on some of the ideas and topics that we discussed today. We can go to our caller, we can ask our caller to give us his last response to this question of this money distribution between the household. Caller 4644, you're on Mr. Page of History. Your last response to the issue, caller.
Well, you have to look at how other ethnic groups obtain wealth. You know, 87% of black businesses gross less than $50,000. And of the 1.9 million black businesses, they hire less than 1 million employees. So that right there is, you know, stepping off in the wrong direction. In order to attain wealth in the United States is to own something. Blacks don't manufacture and produce. As I said before, we live in these large, we reside in these large economic markets, your Pittsburghs, your Philadelphias, your Atlantas, and so on and so on and so on, but you don't control the wealth that's generated by your consumption. You have others that come in and do that. Everyone that's on this radio station that's talking, when time comes for you to go fill your tank up, in your own neighborhood, it's not somebody that looks like you. It's usually somebody who came from 12 time zones away. And the profits that's derived from that activity, they send it back home to do wonderful things. Whereas your children don't have anything to build off of that was left by previous black generation. You never see no Asian kids standing at the red light intersection with a pan or a helmet or a bucket begging for money in order to support their sports activity. That's taken care of by their businesses. So until we get out of that mentality and get out of that present mode of survival, you're going to continue to be at the bottom of these statistics that's supposed to be indicators of American life.
Okay, caller, we definitely like to thank you for your input, for your feedback. We'd like to thank you for your sharing your knowledge on the subject earlier today with Mr. Page in History, and we'd like to encourage you at the end of the show to maybe consider joining us and working with us, because we want to feed our missing pages and we want to build our communities wherever our people are, and we'd love to have you. And again, we'd like to thank you, caller, and we'll let our listening audience know how they can help build Mr. Page in History. So, caller, again, we thank you, and we now will go to our closing comments by our contributors and our analysts. We'll start with June, and then we'll end with Mike. Y'all, final thoughts on some of the issues and ideas and topics that we discussed today. Sister June, your final thoughts.
Numbers paint a picture, and it's not a good picture for me because it's still saying that I am part of a group that's at the bottom, and like the brother was saying, we're not putting money and building wealth so that we can leave a legacy for our children. So, again, I think it's great that if they want, that they should increase the minimum wage to $15 or more to help us to maybe start to amass money for our own families.
Okay, Brother McHale, your final thoughts, please.
Okay. The last brother was on point because what we suffer from as African-Americans, so-called, here in the United States, is a very big handicap because of the situation that we entered the country by. And even in coming into the 20th and 21st centuries, we were not prepared to deal with this particular system. As I go through the community now, I see some of the same problems that I experienced in 72. Most black people have a very poor understanding of how the system works and become victims of payday loans, bad mortgage deals, all kinds of things, but it's all based on the lack of knowledge. And that's one of the biggest things that hurts us at this point. We also suffer from a very bad case of dependency or the slave mind. And it does not even give us the beginning idea of owning for something for self or even to pass on and develop businesses for our children. We educate them to get jobs. and the school system's not going to get them too much of a good job. So once we break that cycle, then we can re-enter the United States as full human beings rather than developing from that three-fifths status that they had put on us back in the slavery time.
Okay, we'd like to close out with our program today by thanking our listening audience for allowing us to come into their homes to share our views and ideas and to get your participation on how can we best serve our communities and get a better understanding of our communities by calling in and sharing your thoughts. For those individuals who would like to become a part of Missing Pages History and help us build this institution, where we can use communications as a means of development in our community, we would like to tell you that you can reach us at Missing Pages of History, Inc., P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261, or you can call us at 804-519-0357. That's 804-519-0357. We would like to have your support. We'd like to have any contributions you'd like to share with us. We'll use all resources towards one particular aim, that is to unite and build our communities and to make sure that in the future our people will have a history book that will reflect the realities of our history, of our experiences, and of our culture. You know, the best people who can tell their history are the ones who have made it. Until next time, again, we see you in 2 weeks. Saturday 12 noon, please share that with your friends. Tell them check out Missing Pages of History. It's a show geared towards making sure that we have a voice and there'll be voices. And again, we look forward to seeing you. And we thank you again in closing for listening to Missing Pages of History. As host Lee Robinson, remember that we must always strive to go forward ever and backwards never. Forward ever and backwards never. Thank you for listening to Missing Pages of History.